Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Inside the Studio on iHeartRadio. My name's Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guests today are responsible for one of the most truly joyous pop singles of the last decade, the exuberant Shut Up and Dance With Me. We need a little of that energy these days, which is good because the band are back with a new album called Heights. No release date's been set, but they've given fans a taste with their new single, the euphoric self-acceptance anthem, Can You Handle My Love? And as if that's not enough, they've also dropped two more tracks off of Heights, Giants and the aptly titled I'm Good. Fans will be able to hear these songs live and in the flesh this fall when the band hit the road as part of their Dream Plane tour. I'm so happy to welcome Nick, Eli, and Sean of Walk the Moon.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Can you?
Great.
Hi, everybody.
There is so much to talk to you guys about. I know you have a new album on the way, Heights, but I wanted to start by talking with you about your new single, Can You Handle My Love? And it's an ode to imperfections in a sense. I think you've called it a self-love anthem. Can you tell me a little bit about where that song came from?
I love that. Yeah, I really do feel that way about it. It's like through this lens of meeting someone else, I'm meeting myself, you know, or I'm realizing all the bits and pieces of myself that I want somebody else to like. Actually, that those are the places where I get to love myself. And it was one of those songs that was like coming together in the moment through this vibration. This music just feels like so much fun. I just want it to feel like, I just want it to remind people of what they love about life. You know, it's just like something that's really, I don't know, feels like a summer day or something.
Beautiful. I mean, it's funny you mentioned it. Getting to know yourself better in a funny way through your partner, seeing your own similarities in them and having that reflect back on you. I mean, I guess there's pros and cons. It makes me think of that old Seinfeld joke where he's dating the woman who's just like him. And then later on, he's like, wait a minute. I don't want to date me. I hate me. A classic. But once you push through that, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, the lyrics are so, I mean, to my ears, very personal. I mean, I'm a freak and it's literal. Got a hole in my heart, gonna fill it with chemicals, just the way I am, not trying to be difficult. I know you said on social media, Nick, that you write in a diary. Do you ever use your journal entries as jumping off points for lyrics?
Absolutely, all the time. Yes, it's kind of back and forth. I'll find myself often like writing a song and I'm not even sure what it's about. And then I'll go back and read something and I'll realize, you know, that had been stirring in my mind, or it'll be kind of in this really weird reverse chronological thing where I'll write a song and not be entirely like, it'll feel authentic and but I won't be certain like who it's about in my life or whatever. And then maybe a year, 2 years later, I'm like, oh no, it's like it was about this that's happening now. How did I do that? I think life is just life happens to us in cycles. And so themes will repeat, you know, as you grow and evolve and you meet life in, you know, new ways and you make different choices. These cycles come back. And so maybe that's why I'm living in my own time portal. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I believe that there are people who come into our lives for a reason, to bring us to a new place and kind of get us to that next, I don't want to call it step, but whatever that next place is. I mean, it must be funny for all of you listening to these songs back, almost like dream decoding. You realize later on, like, oh my God, that's what all that meant. That's what, you know, they always say that every character in your dream is really you.
I love that. I think that's really accurate.
Flaws seems too harsh. Their own imperfections. Do you have any tips, all of you, for self-acceptance? What do you want people to get from this song?
Something I sort of started to say before, but that I keep coming to. Well, this is a fun time and a strange time for us, where we are talking about the music for the very first time. And so there are some ways that we've, you know, chatted about, like, these are some of the themes of the album, but a lot of times this stuff is, we're coming into realization of it in some of these first few interviews, you know?
That's interesting.
Yeah. And so something that I keep coming to is this feeling of like, I want listeners to be reminded of what they love most about their life. I want them to be reminded of the things that they like the most about themselves. And I think that that's, for me, as in like a self-love journey and the self-acceptance journey, like that's part of it. It's like being reminded, whether it's through another person or reflection or whatever it is, of the things that I actually appreciate about myself. like, oh, I've been spending the last 30 years building this person. And, you know, I actually kind of like what we've created here. I like where we're going and coming into an acceptance of like the places where I'm not perfect. That doesn't mean bad. Those are just growth spots, you know, growth areas. And I don't know. I feel like that's however you're looking at it. I really like to get into the nerdy philosophy. I don't know. Vibe about it, but like it is something we're all doing, right? We're all just I trust that people are all trying to be better people all the time. You know, they're really trying to do their best with whatever they have.
I think when you live a life that's as documented as ours has been for the last 10 years, there are a lot of photos, and it's funny for me to look back on the photos and think about how like I felt badly, you know, during this time of my life, maybe I felt badly about my body, but I felt great about the pants that I was wearing. And now 10 years on, I feel great about my body and think my pants are stupid, you know? And so like,
I've been there so hard. Few things have resonated with me more than what you just said, but please can you?
And so trying to, I think with that in mind, like trying to keep that in mind and having an eye on your future self and what, you know, your life may look like in retrospect can help you feel better about the process, you know, and knowing that this moment isn't forever and it's going to get better, and some things are going to get better and some things are going to get worse, but it's always evolving, you know, God, life should be amusing, right? And it's okay if it's funny. You know, in retrospect.
Wow, that's real. I mean, I never thought about that. Like you said, about having a life that is so well documented and the evidence is right there, either on the internet or on your albums. Does that sort of give you, in a funny way, almost like a bit of a leg up on the rest of us for what you just said, just sort of appreciating being in the moment and kind of knowing that you kind of can choose your path forward? It isn't really all this preordained thing. I mean, every day is a chance to be different, to love yourself, to move in the direction you want to go.
You know, the thing that I think about a lot now is like, what's it going to look like when my son's friends, my son is two, when my son's friends find these interviews that I'm doing now and make fun of him because of some dumb shit that I said in 2012. Do you know what I mean? that's what I'm thinking about now. You know, certain things will come back and haunt you. Just no matter who you are, some things will come back and haunt you and some things will come back and lift you up. You know, and every day we get to choose the way we see ourselves and the way we see other people. Are we looking at the things that lifted those people up, or are we looking at those things that were, you know, humiliating? Yeah. And so it's a choice, you know, it's a choice. And oftentimes because of emotions, it doesn't feel like a choice. And now I'm spinning out into the theoretical stuff that Nick was talking about a minute ago. You know, oftentimes because of emotions doesn't feel like a choice. It feels like you have to feel a certain way, but you don't. It's just that. And that is very much like our new record, which we chose to make.
and the tour this fall, which we are
And the choice that we decided to go on tour. Yeah.
And we highly encourage you to make the choice to buy the
tickets. To come see the tour. Yeah.
And all the merch.
It's good to be doing interviews again.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, in some of the few interviews and statements that I've read you talking about this new album, you said it's a lot more of a sort of an up album, a more optimistic than 2017's What If Nothing. What do you think was responsible for that shift? I mean, was it reaction to everything going on in the world, or was it something within yourself?
That's a great question. I think any artist, I imagine, can't help but like be informed, like the art can't help but be informed by the world going on or, you know, around them. Although, even though 2020 was one of the darker years that we've all experienced, this one has come out with a little more sunshine. Maybe that's why. Maybe that's partly why. I think in 2017, my father was passing away, and there was, there were some wild current events that continued to just, that made the world seem a little scarier in some ways. And that was just, we wanted to make something a little more dark horse for Walk the Moon, even though One Foot's the single and One Foot's like the most hopeful, you can do it anthem we've written, maybe. So even dark for us is not super dark, but
it's not Tom Waits.
Right. The piano's been ringing. I think maybe more than any of the like philosophical stuff, there's something in that in us that wanted to return to like our roots. And there's something, in my opinion, there's something of like the first record and that time that's like come back to life in this, on this album. It's like a little bit of this unbridled like hope and also wildness and fun.
I really feel like that came through on Giants. I think that's such a great song about, you know, sort of a David and Goliath story taking on these big forces. I really liked that. That was of the I think three songs that are out now, that was I think my favorite, just because I thought it was a great message. Tell me a little more about that track, Giants.
Thank you so much. Yeah, as you're talking about that, I'm like, actually some of these tunes came from some of the darkest moments, and it's like, if anything, it's the like transmuting those things into making that choice, like doing something positive with it. Yeah, Giants for me lyrically came from a place of like being in a really tumultuous relationship, and it felt like every single day we were like dealing with something, processing something together, some, you know, something would like turn the whole, felt like it would turn the whole relationship on its head, and yet I was like, so, you know, it was a stormy relationship, but there were times where we were kind of like looking at each other like, we can make it through anything. We are gonna lovingly make our way through any obstacle. And it felt like knocking down these giant monsters every day. Like every day we come out with our sword and shield, and we're gonna, you know, like clockwork, they show up that morning, by that night we've slayed them. You get a couple hours of sleep and wake up and do it again.
If I can offer an alternate perspective on it, I remember when that song was being developed, we were in LA recording. We were recording Can You Handle My Love? And you were giving me a ride to the studio on that particular week. And we'd be driving to the studio and Nick would be like sharing these really intense experiences that he was going through when he went home every night. You know, when he went home from the studio, and then it would be like, you know, it's LA, so it's 40 minutes anywhere. So it's like, you know, it's 40 minutes of like, oh my God, that happened last night. And then we go into the studio and we would have to like strap on our armor to make this up music, you know, to like put that back, or at least Nick, props to Nick, put that away for the 10 hours that we're in there and record stuff like Can You Handle My Love, you know? And so like, even that was a demonstration of being able to persevere and overcome.
Has the last year and a half at this point, wow, been a productive time for you? Because I feel like half the people I know, work has been a great thing to throw themselves into. It's great to have something else to focus on rather than, you know, external chaos, be it personal or just geopolitical with, you know, coronavirus and everything. Or is it hard to kind of get that motivated? Did you feel kind of weighed down by it all? Or did it depend on the day?
We kind of like didn't stop because we were like literally recording I'm Good in the studio, and that was like right when everything shut down. So yeah, it's like we've been busy doing the rest of the album at home, because it's just like there is just a little bit of extra work that goes into it, obviously. You know, we all just sort of rush to upgrade our studio so we could actually keep working. So like, I think Giants is the first one we did, so it was sort of us, like you said, like David and Goliath. Yeah, we were kind of just like little guys, just like, you know, that okay, we got to make this big thing now. Yeah, we've been busy.
Working on Giants being the first one was a really affirming experience, because we were recording separately for the first time. It's not like an electronic drone tune. Do you know what I mean? It's like a big, rock.
It's a band song. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And so we're recording. We're recording this separately in our homes, which are thousands of miles apart, and really like not dipping our toes, but diving in, you know, and it worked, you know, and we knew that the recording was working and that we were excited about it. And that really gave us strength to carry on and finish the record in the way we did.
And what was that? Was there a learning curve to that? What, or like, how did it go when you first started doing the remote thing? Like, that must've been a huge adjustment.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the time, now in the middle of 2021,
you got it down.
Everyone's like, oh, you can do anything over Zoom.
Right.
But at the time, we didn't know if that was really possible. Fortunately, combination of a few like pretty simple applications and a really talented engineer and us like as Sean said, upgrading our personal studios. It really there was a bit of a curve, but in a way it was pretty smooth. I think we were all like really pleasantly surprised with how like it didn't diminish the creative experience. You know, there were hurdles, and it's a totally different thing. Like walking into my living room and then closing the computer, and then I'm out, and then, you know, I'm not in the studio anymore. it's a different thing. The energy is a little different. You know, you're not having necessarily that same dream life experience of like, there's your one of your favorite producers, and you're in there with your band, and like you've got the, you know, all the flashing.
I'm the class.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So the recording console costs as much as your house, you know, like that kind of thing. You know, it's just you and your laptop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't the same, but the creative process was really preserved in this magical way. And I think you can
and enhanced it. In some ways, right? I think the record has like a richer texture from doing it at home, because we would do the tracks that we expected to do. You know, we would get together on our Zoom and I'd do the guitar parts. And we'd be like, all right, great. We have them, send them over and we'll get them edited. And we'd hang up and I'd be like, oh, I forgot. I have this one pedal that maybe, what if I just ran it through that and saw it? Like, let's just see what happens. And so we would all do work kind of offline and find like deeper creative places that we might not have found when, you know, we're on the clock at a fancy studio, or that we might not have given ourselves permission to try, you know, if we weren't in the safe space of our homes. So I actually think the record has a richer texture and more detail because of recording it at our relative spaces.
Wow, that's really interesting. What was the process like of actually building up the tracks? I mean, did they start with you, Sean, and lay down the rhythm track and then put bass on top of that and kind of get the, you know, the rhythm as the foundation, or how did that work?
Yeah, I mean, that's generally the order we start in recording. We'll start with drums and then bass and then guitar, and yeah, so that part really didn't change much. You know, it was just the only thing it changed is like we just got to listen to our own systems at home. It's kind of nice sometimes just being able to control your own volume. Some days you don't want to. So yeah, that like Eli was saying, you know, just the comfort aspect once we got past like the initial hurdles and learning curve and just using all of this new gear, using proper techniques that we might not use when just making a demo or something.
Oh, I mean, it's so cool to think that you're right. I mean, not only are you just emotionally more free being in your own space, but you're right. You're not on a studio time where, you know, every hour is God knows how much money and you really got to like nail it. That's got to be so liberating in a funny way. I mean, and you also work with some really incredible collaborators on this record too. Kay Flay, Tommy English. What did those folks bring to the table for these sessions?
It was so awesome working with Kay Flay and Tommy on Can You Handle My Love? You can actually hear Kay Flay's voice on Can You Handle My Love. There's like in the middle of the verse, got a hole in my heart, gotta fill it with chemicals. What you got? Like that little, what you got? That's Kay Flay. Like literally the lead vocal on the song is like the first one, the first run through. And
that's a first take?
That's a first take. I mean, that was the first, like it was like while the song was being written like that, you know? But Kay Flay's literally in the back of the room going, what you got? And like, we're like, well, let's keep that. Perfect. I can't say that was the one take all the way through. That's not true. But it was like that was the first iteration. Like the energy of that first night is there. You know, I didn't go back and redo any of that because we didn't need to. However, one of my favorite collaborators, and this is a producer, Paul Meany. He's the, you know, formerly the lead singer of Mute Math. I remember the year that I started Walk the Moon in college. I was obsessed with Mute Math. I was like really into Mute Math, had gone to see them with my buddy at Bogart's in Cincinnati, where we're coming back through this fall, playing two nights at Bogart's, and like front row, just going nuts. And then shit, 10 years later, he's like producing our half the album. And that's so cool. You know, it's really interesting working with different producers. And on this record, we have Mike Crossey, who's like very much this, how I might imagine a producer, like this guru wise figure with a, you know, an accent of the British Isles. And And Paul Meany, on the other hand, is a band guy. You know, he's like our big brother. You know, we've played shows with Mute Math in the past. And so he comes with this whole other perspective, and he's also a really talented keyboard player. So it's been really fun to expand, to see what ways the different songs expand depending on who's producing them.
I was just going to say about Paul, the new bundle of songs, there's a song called I'm Good that has this very long outro. This long outro that basically like Paul added after we went home for the day. We came back in the next day and like Paul had like worked out this whole outro, and the piano playing is him. We were working out this outro for our first live performance this weekend, and we like looked at the MIDI, the sheet music for these chords that Paul was playing. I went to jazz school. I've got a degree. I got no idea what he's doing here. I got no clue what he's thinking with these chords, but they're just these beautiful voicings. And it's just, he's bringing this like New Orleans jazz oriented extended chords thing to Walk the Moon, which we never like is unusual for a Walk the Moon record.
Flat augmented ninths and all that kind of crazy stuff.
Dude, it's crazy. It's crazy. Big chromatic energy from Paul Meany. So that's definitely one way that he shaped our record. And yeah. So cool. It's so cool to have his playing on the record.
Yeah. Piggybacking off of that, I liked how bold he was, that basically this outro was kind of at the end of the previous day, we had jammed on a bunch of different stuff, like had created these palettes of bits of music that didn't necessarily even go together. We weren't even sure what we were doing. You know, like I'm on a Juno playing some chords and Eli's playing my chords with his pedals, you know, and we didn't know what we were going to do with any of that stuff. We were like, well, that was fun. And then the next morning, Paul has taken the liberty of adding a section of music to our song that like has pieced all of these bits that we've played together, and then with his own like chords underneath. And so it's just, that takes a certain type of artist, you know, to make that choice. We could have totally been like, nah, man, it's not who we are, bro, you know, but it was beautiful and we loved it. And then we realized, oh, there's more song there and there's more lyrics to be, you know, and that's where the section of I'm Good comes in. You know, one more thing before I fade away, you know, it's like that was inspired by this new section of music.
You mentioned earlier that so much of this record to you almost felt like a return to your roots. I thought it was interesting to learn that a number of these songs actually, in some cases, are almost a decade old. The demos that you started back, you know, when you first started the band. What was it like coming back to those demos? What was the refining process like of, first of all, deciding which of those to use and then taking them apart, reconstructing them, giving them a polish?
Well, the album's called Heights. There is a title track. And one of the, there's two songs on the record that are this old. They're like nearly 10 years old, nine years old maybe, and it's stuff that we've loved since then, you know. And it's just like, it's not always clear or logical the way that some songs make it to on a record and other ones don't. Heights in particular is like this tune that I've just like, man, I feel like we should put this on a record. there's an experimentalness to it that has kept it alive for this long in our vault. And we're a band that writes a lot of songs. There's a big vault of tunes that who knows if anyone will ever hear. And that one continued to like, you know, shine and raise its hand. And you asked about the refining process, right? Because, you know, a song that lasts that long, like what I think oftentimes, and I think it's true for the two older songs, which kind of they actually like bookend the album. There's something spontaneous, something like the spirit of that particular moment. Like if you look at a song as like a Polaroid of that moment in time, like there's something really like lightning in a bottle that can be lost in all the infinite things that you can do in production and in, you know, in the virtual studio, and in revisions on revisions on revisions. But these two songs, we really were hellbent on preserving that initial spark. And I'm really grateful. It feels so amazing now to finally, you know, but they've been demos forever. So it feels really amazing to hear them played and fully realized. And that they work. They work so good.
How did you land on Heights as the title track?
That's a great question. We had a bunch of ideas in it, and it just like, again, it like kept winning. I don't know. We haven't like, I don't know that we've gone super deep on why it's the right one. I really believe in the listener's power of choice and the listener's power of interpretation, and that like we're gonna have our reasons for this or that, or what a song quote unquote means, but it's way more important to me what it means to somebody else. So for me, Heights is both like the highs that you realize are so high up from down low, from those moments, from the troughs and the valleys. And also when you're up there and you're up in those big heights, like how it might be kind of terrifying that like, you know, how high up you are. Like, is there more good stuff to live? Can I keep reaching for more joy, more excitement, more meaning and significance? And you know, nothing's permanent. It might fall at any moment. So it's like, so there's danger and joy all in one thing for me personally about it.
It's a good summation of life, danger and joy. Is there a release date set for the album?
I don't think so.
We're aiming for, but we shall not reveal it today on this day of our Lord.
We shall look forward to it then. When you weren't making music in the last year and a half, what did you all like to do? What was your favorite way to decompress, either together or solo? Unwind, stay grounded, stay amused, take your pick. What was your favorite new pandemic hobby, so to speak?
Parenting was my new hobby. Yeah.
Heard good things.
Yeah. I recommend it. It's hard work, but fulfilling. You know, yeah, my it certainly feels strange to silver line give a pandemic a silver lining, but like, right. You know, but truly felt so lucky to be with my son for the last 2 years. You know, I would have missed a lot of his development and a lot of like firsts, or I would have seen him through a screen, you know. Yeah. And I was actually able to be here and form such a strong bond that now it'll make everything else seem so hard. It'll make everything so much harder now to go on tour and to like, you know, because we are so bonded and so used to seeing each other all the time. But it's been really wonderful, and figuring out the logistics. Just like the maddest, hugest props to parents everywhere of all varieties, you know, because like this shit is really hard, you know, like I always thought of myself as being like a two kid person. Like I have a brother, and I was like, always like, we'll have two. And now I've got one, and I'm like, oh my God, how does people have three? Are you crazy? You know, I'm just like, so like figuring out the logistics and how to continue being a person beyond parenting while also being committed to parenting. It's been a major undertaking, and truly like very, very fulfilling and joyful. And also I baked for a while.
I was the sourdough going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I also baked and got into gardening. I've got raspberries.
Cool. Sean, Nick, what about you? What are you guys up to in the last year? That's maybe something new that you hadn't really dove deep into before.
I'm still thinking about Eli's kid right now, actually. it was a wild experience. This past weekend, we had our first show back at Wonderstruck in Cleveland. Real life festival, and it felt incredible. And it was the strangest thing, you know, the last time I saw Eli's son, he was a little tiny itty bitty baby. And now he's nearly two and walking around.
Wow.
And if there's any indicator of the lost year, it's like, whoa, like we've got a new person in our family now, you know, like who wasn't there before. And it's, it was so cool getting the whole family, the band and crew. We've got so many members of our crew who've been with us a really, really long time. And you know, we had parents there, and so it was really special and to see Eli as a dad and like just get to like watch this like little man running around was very, very special.
I show up in different shoes when I'm doing the dad thing. I show up in Crocs when it's time matching Crocs with my son. Yeah. Aww. When it's time to dad, I got to wear the matching Crocs.
Yeah, my sister had a baby during all this, and I only saw her pregnant once. And even then, it wasn't really, she couldn't really tell. So in my mind, it was like, I missed the whole step of like, I don't know. I feel like being able to sort of see her in the process would have made it more real. But now it's like, oh my God, next time I finally saw her again and she's got a baby. It's just like, oh my goodness. Like you mentioned that being a strange way to measure the passing of the lost year and a half. That's one right there. I went from seeing my little sister and all of a sudden she's a mom with a little one who's still very, very young, but still it is wild.
Wow. Like in no other time in the last 10 years would Sean not meet my child until he was two, you know? Yeah. Like that, like Sean, like that's crazy. You know, that's a totally different lifestyle than how we've been living.
Yeah, Sean, what about you? What about outside of studio stuff?
No, I just locked myself in the entire time. really, just been going on like road trips when I've not like a permit. Just going on drives, really, what I've been doing. Nothing interesting.
Oh, man, that's good. So you're out in L.A., right? You're going up like Pacific Coast Highway and stuff like that?
Gone up that a couple times. Love Enzo Borrego Park. Really weird driving around the Salton Sea. A couple of times.
Well, speaking of going out and driving, you're hitting the road in September, thank goodness. How does that feel? I mean, you mentioned the festival in Cleveland a minute ago. I mean, just gearing up for this time on tour has to feel 1,000,000% different than anything any other tour you've ever done. How are you guys feeling?
It was quite a task this last week. You know, we had a few days of rehearsal leading up to the first show back, and we kept describing it like being kind of tossed into the deep end. You know, it was a headline set for our very first show back, and playing new songs. And it was quite an undertaking, but it was something we were all just like fully down for, fully committed to making it happen. And it lit the fire again. I'm sad that I'm stoked that we're playing a tour at all, but I'm sad that it's now going to be a couple months between this show and the next. Because it feels like home. You know, it's like this is one half of our beingness, you know.
Were you ever a runner, Jordan?
No.
No? Okay.
Not really, no.
All right. So it makes me think of I was a cross country runner in high school. And it makes me think of the first run that I ever went on, where it was like an easy run. It was like 5 minutes, like go run for 5 minutes. And I'm like, great, I can do that, no problem. And so I just like take off, right? And I burn out immediately. You know, I burn out after like a minute and a half, and then I'm just like dead for those last 4 minutes. That's kind of what the first two or three songs of this set were like. I was like, let's go! You know? I was like, oh, I've completely forgotten how to play live. I need to pace myself. I need to breathe. Let's breathe. Let's drink the water, you know? And then it came back. And then once I started breathing and like taking it easy, but God, it was so exciting. It was so exciting to be back on stage and to like be received by the audience the way we were. We saw there's a wonderful, wonderful Instagram called WTM as Cats, which recreates photos of us, but as felines. And so the person who runs that, you know, we see her around a lot and we hadn't seen her in years. And she was front and center, you know, after all this time singing along to every song. And it's so wonderful and so touching to reconnect with those people and see that they're still there for us. It was really emotional. I like almost cried a number of times. There were a number of times where I got goosebumps and I felt the thing, the little pre-cry thing happening in my chest. And I'm like, steel up, you know? And then after the set, I talked to, you know, a number of guys in the band and a number of the guys in the crew. And just like everyone had the same experience. Everyone was like, oh yeah, dude, I almost cried. I almost cried tonight. You know, it was so emotional. It was really wonderful. And I can't wait to do it again.
Oh man. Well, we can't wait to see you guys back out there soon. Thank you so much. Nick, Eli, Sean, thank you so much for taking the time today. Really appreciate it. You guys are the best. Can't wait to see you out there again soon.
Thank you. I'm gonna do a full on plug now. The tour this fall, the Dream Plane tour, we're playing a bunch of places we haven't done in a while, like some of the like smaller clubs. Like we wanted something to create something a little more intimate. Our first time back, you know, like two nights at Bogart's at our hometown in Cincinnati and all over the US. It's gonna be full on. We're gonna play the new record. It's something we are so thrilled to bring. So here we go. Tickets are available. Y'all get involved.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio or other fantastic shows, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.